I love the sound of breaking glass. J'espère que vous êtes bien à notre écoute. Notre lunchtime en anglais continue avec la chronique Breaking Glass de Dennis Bro. I need the noises of destruction.
This is Bro on the global television beat, Breaking Glass. Today's episode, Space Force. Not Dr. Strangelove, but McHale's Navy. What could be hipper than a satirical treatment of Trump's latest boondoggle, the Space Force? And who better to do it than the team that brought us The Office, a funny and occasionally fatal skewering of the corporate ethos, originally conceived by that grandmaster of roasting Hollywood, Ricky Gervais. Would that that had happened. Instead, Netflix's Space Force, co-created by The Office showrunner Greg Daniels and star Steve Carell, is a tepid, often unfunny, not skewering or lambasting, but romanticizing of what the U.S. is doing in space. The show wants to hold on to the wonder of the scientific exploration of space, but the reality is instead the U.S. vision is one of a dangerous, expensive conquest, which could add yet another threat to the future of this planet. This is not Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. It's the Dark Star. And the Pentagon phrase the series uses to describe the project is the bellicose boots on the moon. Trump may be a waddling, portly Darth Vader who would fall down if he tried to wield a laser sword, but behind him is the full might of the Pentagon and especially the powerful U.S. arms industry, which can't wait to feast once again at the public trough this project has opened. The Space Force, with perhaps a $25 billion price tag over the first 5 years, is described by the administration as a project that will allow the U.S. to achieve full-force dominance, controlling Earth by deciding who can and can't leave the planet, and allowing the U.S. to mine the moon and possibly Mars. It's claimed this mission could be the largest industrial project in human history, with space no longer, as in previous treaties, being declared a global commons, but rather a domain, as Trump says, that belongs to us. The Space Force, with its inherent dangers to this planet in launching nuclear-powered ships into the heavens, is the U.S. response to China's Belt and Road or New Silk Road. That project, linking Asia to Europe, which, yes, might indebt other countries to China and which may involve destructive ecological components such as dams, would also raise the living standards of millions. The U.S. counterproposal in the form of the Space Force, which Japan is already enlisting under, involves starting a costly arms race and instead falls into what Giovanni Arrighi calls an international mafia-style protection racket on the order of pay up and join us as junior partner or we'll declare you an enemy and come with force against you. The show, which features exterior shots of the Pentagon, suggesting it was done with the complicity of the military, enlists Carell as General Mark Naird, like Nerd, the socially challenged, partially hard-edged, and partially decent head of the force. Carell's character in The Office was somewhat similar, a boss who wanted to be liked, but there he was surrounded by other characters who often held him up to deserved ridicule. This does not happen here, where great pains are taken to preserve Naird's decency in the chaos that surrounds him, all of which makes the show less funny. It could have been Dr. Strangelove. Instead, it hews closer to a slightly more sophisticated McHale's Navy. This pulling punches in the series is an indication of the presence and pressure of the Pentagon and its chilling effect on American culture. There are some brilliant asides. Naird defends the efficiency of the U.S. Post Office, and the project's chief scientist, Dr. Mallory, John Malkovich, tells him the Post Office is now defunct. Where do you think they got the money for this project, he adds. But mostly, the show hews to the Pentagon arms industry line. The project must accelerate, because first India and then China threatens to surpass it. This is one of the rationales for the Space Force, a lie because China and Russia are both far behind and neither have the desire nor the economic power to compete with the U.S. in space, though if pushed, they must. Naird, who says in response to these countries launching, everybody treats us like a doormat, must by the end of season one counter an aggressive Chinese move to claim a section of the moon that will keep the U.S. from landing its spaceship. There's a nice budding relationship between the Chinese-American nerd scientist, Silicon Valley's always reliably funny Jimmy O. Yang, and a female African-American hipster pilot who becomes an astronaut. The relationship develops while she is in space and he is in the control room, and this interplanetary social distancing accounts for some of the better moments of the series. They are not enough to save it. The show, unfortunately, fits too much like a glove into what is the latest component of what President and General Eisenhower warned was a grave threat to American democracy, the military-industrial entertainment complex. Last resort and the problems of resistance. Near the end of the first season of Space Force, General Naird disobeys a direct order and refuses to bomb the Chinese mission on the moon. This unlikely event was the basis for a golden oldie, a show which in 2012 defied the Pentagon, as its nuclear subcommander, the very good Andre Brower, did the same, refusing a direct order of the president to nuke Pakistan. The show, now available in the U.S. on Crackle and worldwide on Amazon, was a first cut against the 9/11 conservative consensus. It was broadcast on ABC, which had a predominantly female audience and was less attuned to the kind of militant, largely male police bands on CBS, CSI, Criminal Minds, Blue Bloods, etc., or NBC, the Law & Order franchise. ABC had tried 5 years earlier to buck the consensus with Traveler, a show about grad students falsely accused as terrorists, a kind of fugitive with these Richard Kimballs fleeing Homeland Security. That show was almost immediately pulled, barely lasting 8 episodes. With Last Resort, the network was back again, this time with the showrunner Sean Ryan of The Shield, a Breaking Bad cop show which, though it centered on the police, did illuminate and illustrate the innate nature and corruption of the force. On this go-round, though, the lead character is a person of integrity who opposes a corrupt system embodied by the President of the U.S., a kind of George Bush, anti-Muslim, with a trigger finger duplicating Bush's Iraq invasion. Some crew members oppose the commander's decision and threaten mutiny, while the U.S. sends B-1 bombers against him, with the ship now holed up on an island in the Pacific. The commander threatens to use the ship's weapons against his own Air Force and Navy and sets up a 200-mile no-go zone, as in Washington, the wife of the sub-commander of the ship allies with an arms developer to investigate and expose the president. The show tanked and was canceled after 13 episodes, with the network allowing the showrunners to wind up the series in a finale. It was claimed the problem was that a military drama, even one with a mixed male and female cast, did not appeal to an ABC Thursday otherwise female-centered lineup built around Grey's Anatomy and its Dr. Dreamy. But there's also every reason to believe that the show, which cast aspersions on the invasion of Iraq and featured a lawbreaker president, was simply too far out of the liberal consensus. Its point of view is too sharply anti-Pentagon, anti-military, and anti-defense industry establishment. Traveler and Last Resort are examples of shows that fall outside the purview of the Pentagon, and these shows, unlike the more soppy Space Force with its timid critique, are quickly annihilated. After its demise, Last Resort was broadcast in Australia, Canada, the UK, and New Zealand, the countries that along with the US constitute the Five Eyes intelligence network, where hopefully its social criticism registered and helped at least prompt some questioning of that enterprise. This is Bro on the Global Television Beat, breaking glass and signing off. Oh, change of mind,
something breaking glass. Dennis Bro is the author of Film Noir, American Workers and Postwar Hollywood, Class Crime and International Film Noir, and Maverick or How the West Was Lost. Is Hyper-Industrialism and Television Seriality the End of Leisure and the Birth of the Binge? Nothing new, some breaking glass. C'était Breaking Glass de Dennis Bro sur Art District. Très bonne suite de nos programmes, jazzistiques et artistiques, à notre écoute. Some breaking glass.